we are a part of that collection of two white men doing podcasts. We're two queer white men. Does that differentiate us at all?
Or does it?
It totally helps with the topic.
We're talking about
musicals.
And we're talking about musical theater.
I'm Peter.
And I'm Nathan.
And yes, musical theater has gospel.
And dancing boys.
And fancy hats.
So join us for the Gospel of Musical Theater, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
What's your fucking favorite type of beer thing?
I'm just like a cold lager boy.
Lager? Fuck yeah.
I'm a fan of a lager, which is basic.
How much foam do you like at the top?
Obviously none. That's...
You're right. Sorry.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this week we've got Leo Reich on this gay fucking ass god fucking damn podcast. He is a New York Times critics pick for his hit show, Literally Who Cares. He did it in the Edinburgh Festival. He did it in London, where The Guardian said it was the number one show. So it's a pretty big darn deal that Leo is here, and bonus points, he's Jewish, which you know I absolutely adore. I want to thank you for your nice comments on the Dave Holmes episode last week. It really was a big one for me, and we've got some really cute new reviews on the podcast pages. If you want to add to the list of glows, glow on, beach, and leave that review. It would mean the fucking world. The only drama in my life right now is passport drama, which is there anything sexier? The threat of traveling internationally and not being able to. I got one of my first auditions in about 15 years, and then I got a callback, which I, you know, of course, the first time I get a callback in forever, it's shoots in Vancouver, and my passport expired. Too long ago, so I'll keep you posted on if I'm going to be in Canada. Ever. Apparently passports are taking a long time these days. But enough about me. Let's get into this episode with Leo Reich. We discuss his bar mitzvah theme. I do a very offensive British accent. We talk about Top Man. I give him a question about Chris Olsen. We talk about Gen Z slang at the end of the episode. So stay tuned for the end to see if you know the words that I cannot use in a sentence without sounding like I belong on a list. If you enjoy Gay Ass Podcast, follow along at Gay Ass Podcast on Instagram. Follow me at Eric Wills. I'm starting to post more videos because the world is ending, and why not share yourself? I love you so much. Enjoy. Leo Reich is on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Oh, I'm going to say something that might be wrong. Are you the first British person on this podcast? I think so, and we're going to run with it. How does it feel to be the first Brit? Do you think I'm an American pig, or are you glad to be trailblazing?
I'm glad that you said it so that I didn't have to say it. Thank God.
True or false, I'm an American pig. True.
No, well, it's an honor to be representing my country in this way. It's a dream. I love this nation. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, wow. That was so beautifully said.
Thank you.
If I go into a British accent subconsciously, will you be angry?
I'll be thrilled. Thank God, finally talking to someone on my level is what I'll think. It will trick my brain.
Listen, Leo, it will trick your brain because this whole conversation will be all about talking about gay stuff and, you know, a little posh, but not too much. But I like Chloe from The Circle.
That is, I mean, I've heard a lot of British accents since I've been here, and I say this with all the love of my heart, that's by far the worst one I've ever experienced. Where have you got that? I mean, what media you've been consuming is baffling to me. That's crazy.
Austin Powers. There was
a hint of Northern in there, which is not usually what I get. Usually people go...
Yeah, I was trying to go more country. I didn't want to go too posh because, you know, it's... it can be considered like Queen Elizabeth, but I'm trying to go a lot more Northern.
Yeah, you're doing something. It's something. It's a sort of global accent.
Honey, she's doing something.
You're doing something for sure.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. Wow, I can't believe I just did something there.
Speaking of...
Yeah, go on.
Leah, you've caught me in a funny mood. I don't know why, but I think it's because I feel so safe.
Let's be silly with it, for the love of God.
Let's be silly with it, for the love of God.
Shall I do it? I could do American. I could do American the whole time as well.
Give us...
I'm not good at it. I'm not, like, this isn't...
You told me I'm bad at it, so you're in the same space.
You are bad at it, but I'm also bad. I'm like...
Okay, so I'll go British, you go American.
All right,
Leah, I'm going to ask you a question first. Can you tell me, how has it been to be living now in New York City for the past month doing your show? And do you feel like the gay people are actually as devastatingly mean as you thought they'd be?
Oh my God, thank you so much for asking. I love the city. I love being here. I'm in the Village right now. It's a dream. I have this studio. I'm really thrilled to be here. The gay people actually are the same as in London, where I'm from. They are all super mean, and I don't get on with them, and I find them to be super annoying. But I still love them to come pay for my show. They can be great audiences, but I try to stay on a social level. I try and just hang out with straight people because that's my crowd.
You like your gay people like you like your audience members in the seats of the theater and nowhere else.
How was that? How was the accent?
It was frustratingly good.
I love that.
I'm really angry.
That's not the reviews I've been getting so far. I've been getting really bad reviews on that accent, but thank you. I feel like it's good. I feel it sounds good to me.
Yeah, you really are talking to mean gay people because that accent was stupid good. I mean, like...
Whoa. Thank you.
I'm just already picturing you in the movie where then the people are like, oh my God, did you know he's not even American?
Yeah, I'm going to be in Euphoria. I'm going to be that Australian guy in Euphoria. We have the same look, I think.
You do have the same look. You both have... And I've actually heard you both have the same size package.
Uh-huh. 100%.
Because haven't you heard that his package is... Wait, what did you hear that it was?
100 feet long. Wait, yeah, what did you say?
100 feet. Oh, wow. You are going American. You even said feet.
I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means even. Is that big or small? I don't know.
That's the SNL version of your life, which is that you send a dick pic and you say it's 100 feet because you don't know American measurements.
That's good. I'm taking that. I'm stealing that. It's gonna be
steal it, girly.
That's in the show.
But truly, you did have a gorgeous write up in the Gay Times that's so funny. I'm really looking forward to joining NYC's famously non-competitive comedy circuit, and even more so, its notoriously welcoming gay scene. I lived in New York for a very long time. I don't live there now, but I didn't get too enmeshed in the gay world. And so I'm curious, if we're really diving in, have you had any like gay romance? Because let's tell the girls that you're there for your stunning New York Times critics pick show.
I am.
Called Literally Who Cas. It's at the Greenwich House Theater. It is running for another week. It ends on March 11th. So you've been there for what, a month now?
Yeah, almost a month. Just over 3 weeks, I think.
Okay, so have you had, like, any, like, flirtatious, subway eye fucking, anything that's felt really gorgeous to you?
Not really, although it's like, I'm famously bad at it. Like, I can't do it. But I have, like, sometimes people will come see the show, and then, like, the next day they'll send me an Insta DM request being, like, nice legs or something, which obviously makes me want to jump off a bridge.
Have you taken anybody up after the leg compliment? Have you spread yours after?
I'm not good at it. And I know comics that are really good at it and will just be like, hey, thanks for saying my legs are nice. Please come backstage right now. Whereas I'd rather die. I'd actually rather die than do that.
What scares you? Why would you rather die? What part about that do you not like?
I don't know. I'm not like a massively like sexual being, I don't think. And ooh. I like a kind of, I'm like desperate to be in love the whole time. Boring.
Aww,
so, oh no.
Wait, no, you're like, wait, okay, I'm really now going to sound ancient. What's the word for someone who is more attracted to, like, the mind?
Oh, my God. Obviously, okay, so I've never called myself this because I think every single person that has called themselves demisexual in my presence has been the most irritating person of all time. And also,
if 2023 is vegan,
the biggest slut I've ever met. It's also like, oh, yeah, you're attracted to intelligence. Yeah, how did you, they said three words to you.
Like, they said, come over now.
Yeah.
And then you said they had such a great mind as you throated their cock.
Yeah. Literally. I've never met anyone who has sort of followed through on that. But
you've heard it here first. Demisexuals are the sluttiest people out there.
I think it's true. I think it's true. But maybe a bit.
Listen, though, I think if you have a smidge of demisexual, that's probably, like, a really good thing because you are not... And to the people who are opening their holes left and right, I support your truth and your journey, but you're maybe just, like, wanting to... You don't like a DM slide. You want it to probably be, like, a connection conversation first that then...
Yeah.
Do you think once you've had the conversation, do you then want to, like, unbutton pants? Or are you just, like, you don't, like... Okay.
I'm not anti-sexual. I'm not sex positive, but I'm not sex negative. I'm sex neutral. I'm sex itself. I don't, let me just get this on record. I don't hate a DM slide for myself. I'll pocket that self-esteem boost in a huge way. I just won't follow up with anything. I'll be like,
you just
thanks.
Won't respond.
I'll respond. I'll be like, thank you. And that's it.
Thanks, exclamation point.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Tell your friends.
Do you know what? I have to say, I do have a very good friend of mine who is similar to you, where he is not great with the DM flirt. And I guess I realize it's more of a skill than is openly discussed, which is you have to be able to... Not only yes and, but I feel like there's risk involved, which is that you have to make sure the other person is actually into you in that way. And then you have to up the ante. And if you're not so sure that the ante is even there, then why would you up it? But exactly. I don't know. If people are DMing you after your show, clearly they have a talent crush and clearly a leg crush.
And I had a leg crush, for the love of God. Yeah. I don't know.
Do you have really good legs?
I have legs. I think the thing in the show is that I wear the tiniest little shorts you've ever seen in your life. And so it almost feels like I'm begging for people to slide into my DMs being like, you have good legs, because their legs are
not
so
not you
present.
Saying you're asking for it. Yeah. Oh my God, you're your own. You're getting canceled by catcalling yourself. You're like, well, I was asking for it.
I'm begging to get canceled. I'm hoping and praying every day. What a relief that would be to finally just do it, get it over with.
I mean, it is inevitable, I will say.
Just for all of us.
I'm sure actually we're both, our demisexual take is going to be, I think, the nail in the coffin.
I hope so. I'm praying for both of us that it is. I'm having a weird thing at the moment, which is like, I've been in New York single for 3 weeks. And so I'm trying to be like, I'm Sex in the City. I'm girls or whatever. And I just truly can't muster the... This is that I feel like I should be on my hands and knees, wet around the mouth every 2 seconds, but I can't be bothered to do it.
But it's don't so judge yourself if you're not constantly getting bruised knees. I mean, I think, and apologies for me saying when I was your age, because I truly think that is...
I thought you were younger than me. I thought you were 18 years old.
And that's why your career is blowing up, because you're talking to powerful old men like me. Cut to, I'm living in a shack. I think that when I was in my early 20s, I was like, God, I need to be fucking so much, because that's what you're supposed to do. And I would sometimes like judge myself for not being more, as you say, wet around the mouth. And then I realized that like part of a gorgeous slutty phase is knowing... It's hard to have it at that point because you're still figuring out even like things that get in the way of a slutty phase. Like you're figuring out like what gets you off. And it's of course like you're not a fucking child. I get that. But it's like I feel like I'm more sexually even just like communicative and confident in my 30s. And I feel like a lot of it's backwards with when your slutty phase is supposed to be. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It makes a lot of sense to me.
When you look around, like, at a subway train, where do your eyes go in terms of type of people?
Well, this is the other thing, is, like, I think I need to speak to someone for a full 20 minutes before I'm like, is there a, like, I like a vibe. I'm a vibe.
Demisexual.
I'm a demisexual. But it's not, I feel like when people say they're demisexual, it's like they need to have a master's degree or whatever.
Sure.
But it's not
sure.
that at all. It's not like I need to see the credentials. I need to scope it out. I need to be in the room. I'm terrible at dating apps. Sorry to be the first person to ever say it. But there are actually problems with dating apps, you guys. I don't know. I just can't get a vibe. I can't gauge a vibe. Someone could be like the most rich person all the time. And I'm like, I don't feel anything towards you.
No, I get that. It's so hard to get a vibe when you're not in person. And especially for, I don't know, you. I've read a lot about your interviews. And it's like, you make a good point that the years that you spent at the beginning of COVID were like, how old were you when COVID started? Like 20?
21, yeah. 21.
It's just a weird time to be a human being, and especially at that age.
Yeah, it is weird. I don't know. I had the same feeling then, just like more extremely than I'm having now, which is like, your time is running out, and you're young for 1 second of your life, and you should be like going out with 100 people, and you're not allowed to do it. Like, at least at that point, I had something to blame it on, which was the COVID-19 pandemic. Whereas now, it's like I truly only have myself to blame. So I kind of prefer it when I was locked in my room and being like, if I was out of my room right now, I'd be fucking so many fucking people. It'd be crazy. And then I was let out my room literally on the first day in England where the lockdown ended, and everyone was like, lockdown's over, we're gonna go crazy. I stayed in by myself, got a takeaway, and watched The English Patient. So it's
good for you.
Do you know what I mean?
You're like, I need to just like self-care because it's been so hectic since we opened up an hour ago.
Literally.
But I
after
think that's,
complaining
that's,
so much, I don't know.
Well, let's talk about what that countdown clock comes from, because I talk about this in therapy all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's either just the generation of we need to be successful yesterday and like you're never doing enough, or maybe like the perpetually online thing, or is it, say it with me, girls, Judaism?
Oh my God.
We are both Jewish.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm also just making that an excuse to bring this up because I want to connect with you on that level. There might also be like, we need to be achievers. And if we don't achieve, then the Jews will perish. Maybe we feel that pressure.
Oh, that's that's so funny. And maybe that is true. I was going to say gay even. Maybe it's something to do with gay.
What if I was like, I'm not gay? It's also a gay thing too.
I think for me, it's maybe a gay thing.
Well, this is called That's a Gay Ass Podcast. And I was like, and I forgot to bring up the fact that maybe it's because we are gay.
Yeah. And Jewish.
So,
Can you imagine to have all of that stacked on your poor little back from the day you were born, gay and Jewish?
My poor little back. So because you are Jewish, I have to ask you the question, were you bar mitzvahed? And if you were, did you have a theme?
I was bar mitzvahed, and I didn't have so much a theme, but what I will say is that by my bar mitzvah party, we hired an animal entertainer who bought various kinds of exotic animals. That was kind of the vibe that I went for my bar mitzvah. There was an owl.
Are we talking peacock? Are we talking...
I can't claim that there was a peacock, but there was a meerkat.
What's a British exotic animal?
I think that's a contradiction in terms. I think that's a, you know, that's a paradox. You can't have a British exotic animal. What, like a rat?
I'm so sorry. Let me ask again. Yeah. What animal did you colonize to bring over to England?
Yeah. Sort of every animal became ours in the 19th century, thank God. So what was that? That was a meerkat. That was an owl. There was a python. There was a crocodile. There was an armadillo. And also, we were celebrating me becoming a man. So there was a lot going on.
That's a lot with an armadillo at the bar mitzvah. I mean,
is it a bar mitzvah if you don't have an armadillo? Come on.
Literally, when I renew my vows to my manhood and I have my second bar mitzvah, you know what I'm going to have there?
Armadillo.
And In-N-Out Burger. an armadillo and a burger bar, bitch. Wow,
yeah.
I love that for you. Exotic animals at the bar mitzvah. Did you wear makeup at your bar mitzvah?
No. No, of course not. I, of course, did not. Some of the photos of me at my bar mitzvah are some of the most insane things. The outfit was the most, like, quintessential early 2010s top man ensemble sure. that you've ever yes. seen. Sort of like skinny tie, Czech yes. shirt kind of vibe.
I held on to some of that Top Man stuff longer than should be legally allowed. I don't know if you remember, there was a Top Man shirt that every gay person had, which was like V-neck. There was like two buttons yeah. or something right here. Oh my God. I wore that out. I literally got that probably my freshman or sophomore year of college. And I wore it through a relationship that ended a year after college. I had it with my now husband. And I think eventually he was like, burn it and throw it away. It was, I don't know what I had that was such a deep connection to that Top Man shirt.
No, it was a cultural craze. Everyone was absolutely going insane for those neon contrast Top Man tops, which
foaming
were
foaming at the mouth.
The ugliest things I've ever seen in my life. Sometimes I look at the pictures and I'm like, I can't believe that anyone was allowed to do this.
I could pull up the picture of me wearing it. I'm sure I could find it.
But you know that coming back, that kind of color scheme is coming back, because I have a younger sister who the TikTok girlies are absolutely obsessed with it. It's cycling back, and I'm scared. I'm scared for my life, and I'm scared for the life of those closest to me.
Me too. I think it's too soon.
Everyone hold your loved ones close, because the Top Man shirt is coming back.
The neon Top Man shirt. Well, then since we're going back in time to the Bar Mitzvah era, I'm going to ask you the podcast question, which is Leo Reich. Whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame?
This was hard. I was thinking about this and I was like, there are several options. But ultimately, I do think that it's football, the sport. I'm blaming football, the sport, for two reasons. The first is that I hated it so much from a young age because my mm-hmm, older brother mm-hmm. and my dad obsessed with football. And I felt I was like, what am I missing from this?
Leo, I'm going to interrupt before you say the second thing, because that is such a uniting fact about us gay girlies, is that when your older sibling and your dad both enjoy the sport and you can't find your way around it, is there anything worse? For me, it was hockey. My twin brother and my older brother play hockey. My dad played in an adult league. Leo, an adult league? Can you imagine?
Hockey is comparatively, I hate to say this, quite a gay sport. It's pretty gay to me.
I think it's okay to say that. I think at the end of the day, all sports are gay. My twin brother, who is still very much straight, was a wrestler. So. Whoa. Lot to unpack, but yeah, so football, and let's just be clear, when you say football, you're talking
about soccer,
but for, of course, I am smart, so I know that you meant that, and I don't think we need to label it anymore. So football, so your brother and your dad are super into it, and you're like, what is wrong with me?
Yeah, my brother was really excited when he found out he was having a younger brother, because he was like, finally someone to play football with. I was like, how about, no, I would rather die. Let me sit at the table. And randomly, my thing at the time was bird watching. So it's like football, but sort of like with a twist in that there's no ball and it's birds.
I see the connection.
Yeah, I went a very different route. And everyone was okay with that. But also it meant that the reason why I'm saying it made me gay is because if you don't like football in the country that I'm from, you're spending a lot of time in the kitchen with the women of the family while the game's on.
Yeah.
You're talking a lot about sort of who's got who into which primary school. You're talking some gossip someone's friend heard about some other mum. And I'm...
So by proxy, football turned you gay because you spent more time with the ladies in the cuisine, in the kitchen. And I think that is the seed of the, dare I say, not problem, because gay is gorge, but the women that we... It's a problem. The avoidance of the hetero straight men sports crowds, I 100% took solace in the kitchen goss.
Totally. And then also the simultaneous, not to over-intellectualize it, sexualization of the male space to which you are not invited. And in which you feel uncomfortable. It's like a kind of, there's a push-pull. There's a deification of the men who seem to have access to this deep, intense masculine joy from which you're excluded. So then
you're putting the penis on the pedestal.
Oh, yeah.
And you pray at the altar.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But meanwhile, I'm in the kitchen talking about sort of my aunt's friend, Sharon. So that's all of that in one big... And all of this I'm putting down to football.
And that is football. Did I interrupt? Was the second thing the ladies in the kitchen?
No, the second thing was the sexual, like the penis on the pedestal. Penis on the pedestal, ladies in the kitchen. I think together.
Penis on the pedestal, ladies in the kitchen. Here we go. I'm a fucking faggot.
Someone drop a beat, because that was huge.
Boom, boom. You also, in this same vein, were quoted in the New York Times that they, in your show, you talk about that you first saw hardcore porn at the age of 9.
Yes. Yes. That's a fun little joke in the show. Is it true?
I don't want you to give up the joke because the girls need to buy the tickets. But I do want, what's the seed of the truth with this story? Was it hardcore gay porn?
Well, I think that because I went to an all boys school, which needless to say is crazy and should be illegal. Everyone, and I went to the sweetest little primary school, elementary school, in your country, that you've ever seen in your life. Very sweet, very, small, and, people that everyone was just, we were just kids, you know, no sort of weird shit going on. I get to the age of 11. I'm sort of quite like, what's the word? Sort of blinkered. No. Naive still to the ways of the world. I arrive at this all boys hell and immediately everyone's watching porn on their phones. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? I can't. What? What? I was in the
first... child.
On the first day of school, our like form tutor, our like grade teacher, translating in real time, was this woman called Miss Bennett, and she was great. I loved her. She was a history teacher.
Not Miss Bennett. Yeah. Okay, Pride and Prejudice.
Literally. Jesus. Can you believe it? England is a joke. It's so on the nose. and at my first day of school at lunch, these other 11-year-olds were like, oh, she's so fit. She has huge tits. And I was like, I'm a child. Don't 11 feels say young. That. Don't say that about that glorious girl that we just met.
That glorious girl. I feel that, and maybe it is true that people are getting younger and younger watching porn, but I'm not saying I was significantly older than 11. I was sure I was like 12 at a friend's house and they would play porn and I would feel very scandalized, but like that's still like on the phone at school, at the all boys school. That is dark sided.
It was crazy.
When did you start watching gay porn, if ever? Have you ever seen gay porn before?
I've never seen it.
Okay, I have some great sites to show you.
I genuinely don't really remember. It must have been around then. It must have been like when I was 13, maybe, I want to say.
Were you ever caught on your home computer? Or wait, you just always had a phone?
I just always had a phone. I just always had a phone. God. And also, I guess I had my own laptop, maybe.
Fuck.
Yeah. Because I'm like, what?
So when you were on America Online, you're like, wait, let's go back.
No, I don't think so. I don't know. I'm always a bit like, what did everyone know and what did they not know?
Yeah. You know,
what is this web of lies that we've created in the family home? But may it stay intact forever.
I want to say that I'm slightly embarrassed by my British questions because I usually try to be a little like more like pretending I know more. But now I'm going to ask you a real question that I'm having, and forgive if it's
it's going to be funny.
Silly or ignorant. No, the question is, the Jewish stereotype in my neck of the woods is overshare, no boundaries, our tummies always hurt. Our mothers are like very big personalities. Are British Jews the same?
It's a weird one. No.
okay, I'm glad I asked. They're not. Wait, tell me what they're like.
I feel like over here, the Jewish community has like a real, the vibe is very like quite left-wing, Democrat, kind of live in big cities, relatively liberal, all of that stuff you just said. In the UK, the Jewish community is like right-wing, conservative, I don't know, quite like traditional, and then there's a tiny little fragment of it that's a bit more sort of New York-y, kind of intellectual, artisty Jewish, but like a
but
really
you're saying
small...
the the majority is more conservative, more traditional, more. So then coming out as gay is probably a pretty big darn deal.
Yeah. I mean, for me, we weren't really part. We're not super religious, like, at all. Mm-hmm. Actually, we're not religious is how I would put it. It's just cultural. But I went to school with a lot of Jewish kids. I knew Jewish kids when I was like 14 who would be like, if I came out as gay, my parents would disown me. Like, it was full, and that's at a relatively progressive school in the middle of London. Yeah, it's like a...
Which is surprising, because I think you're right that a lot in the U.S. is more progressive. Have I, of course, met the Jewish people that are, like, super religious, that are more right-wing and, like, enjoyed that Trump was so pro-Israel and all of that, et cetera? Sure. Yes, but I do think for way more, the majority of the people I meet are that stereotype of, like, yeah, more progressive, loud, talky. And a lot of my family friends who are Jewish are also, like, there's a lot of queerness that has been a surprise to me that, but, like,
yeah,
I'm just, yeah, it's very interesting to see the differences.
Yeah, it is a weird difference. I don't really know why. I don't know why that is. But yeah, it's just sort of happened that. Well, also, I think that the jobs people work, in the jobs that Jewish communities associated with in the UK are much, I think it's much less the arts and much more like finance and lawyers and doctors and a bit the arts, but mainly those other jobs. Whereas here it seems like much more like arts, media, and then those other stuff is maybe slightly secondary.
Sure. Yeah, we still have our doctors, we still have our lawyers, but there are a lot of us.
Yeah.
Me
and you. Just holding down the fort.
Me and you.
In the arts and media.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow, so I think maybe that's something to do with it. But I don't know. Like, I I'm not ingrained in the Jewish community in any sort of meaningful sense.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is that I'm quite the same when it comes to, I'm not religious, but I am very much into the culture and the traditions of it all. And so I have been doing a lot of grappling lately, especially with this podcast, about, like, what my upbringing, how it's informed the way I see the world now. Mm-hmm. And I came from a very conservative place when you really look at it. I came from the Midwest, and last week's episode was incredibly special because this, like, you know, Dave Holmes, amazing MTV legend, is from the same place I'm from. To actually unpack the things that we were told then versus how we're trying to live our truths now was it was a big eye opener. So I'm sure, as you're, you know, doing your show in New York, and also, like, you have a British sensibility, but you also have a very queer sensibility, I'm sure there's just, like, there's a lot of, dare I say, identity politics at play?
I guess so. It's interesting. I always, like, really fetishized the kind of New York-y Jewish intellectual. I remember watching, like, and this is redacted, Woody Allen films, that kind of stuff, and all of the many generations of Jewish people that sort of copied that. Sort of the Noah Baumbachs, even like Lena Dunham, like these people making kind of slow-moving, witty indie comedies. I was like, this, where are these Jewish people in the UK? They are nowhere. They don't exist. It's not a thing.
That you're in New York, do you... I know you're obviously busy doing your show, but does any part of you want to live in New York, or are you like, no, I'm good to visit?
I don't. It's weird here. I never felt like an English person, really. I'm from London, and I would always be like, I'm from London. Not like, I'm English and I love the Queen or whatever. Sure. But I've never felt more English than being here. It's such a... It's so funny. Everyone's super keen to, like, do really well. And, like be successful in a
it's
way that
very achievement oriented, for sure.
It's crazy. I'm like, why?
It's very, hi, what do you do, instead of how do you do?
Yeah, like, how, like, what are you nice? No one gives a fuck. It's crazy. And I feel quite sort of I don't know, ambitious and success oriented in the UK, and then here I feel like the most relaxed kind of
laziest piece of shit
you've ever met in your life. And I don't know if I can handle the fucking get up and go of these people, because it's like,
yeah, I get that.
When are you seeing your friends?
That's probably why I left New York, I think. I was ready to, like, have a new chapter. But I think I also, that energy wasn't fueling me anymore. I think it used to. And then once it became too much, I was like, let's change things up.
Yeah.
But you also are, you're going to do the show in Australia, which is... Yeah. Talk about being a success, Leo. I'm truly meaning this. I'm fucking so impressed by you and excited for you, and just I love seeing this climb. But I'm of course going to ask a really lowbrow question, which is, if you had the choice between a New York City businessman,
yeah,
that you've had a gorgeous 20-minute conversation with,
uh-huh,
or an Australian rugby player that you've had a 20-minute conversation with, who do you want to get knackered with first?
Obviously, rugby player. Are you kidding? You crazy?
Yeah.
New York City businessman. I'm blowing my brains out. You're saying I'm still interested after the 20-minute conversation with a New York City businessman.
I don't know. I thought you might maybe had like a daddy thing where you're like, you want him to...
No. I hate that so much. Anyone wearing a suit on just like a normal day? No. Get out of my life.
We get it. You have a good relationship with your father. Jesus, next. Okay.
Whereas Australia, I think Australian accent, simultaneously funniest voice you can have by far.
Agree.
An accent built for comedy. It's so funny.
Agree.
And then also, secondly, so sexy to me because it's so funny. It's like, I'm just going to talk like this. And it's going to be absolutely great. Oh, yeah, I'm going to have an amazing day. Just sort of share some beers with some friends on the beach. And you're like, what are you talking about? Kiss me.
What are you talking about? Kiss me. And then, God, I'm just picturing now the British-Australian conversation, and I'm just in the corner jerking my gurging.
It's also funny because I feel like Australians, like, I mean, if England's a middle ground between the American kind of intense, success-driven kind of careerism, and then Australia feels like truly, like, these people, you have to hustle to get them up and about. These are the most relaxed people you've ever seen. I can't believe
it. You're right.
These people don't care about anything.
You're going to perform in a theater in Melbourne, and you're going to just be impressed that anybody showed up. And then anything that happens after that is going to be icing on the cake.
I'm gonna chill the fuck out when I get to Melbourne. I'm barely gonna do the show. I'm gonna sort of say the words, get off stage, then
sleepwalk through it. Absolutely.
Have a bunch of brews with my friends. It's gonna be fucking great.
Do you enjoy
great.
Drinking beer? Are you the type of gay guy that can drink beer?
I'm a big beer boy. Big beer boy.
That's very British of you too.
Thank you so much for saying that. It's part of my culture.
I can't do it.
I'm not a beer drinker.
See, my internalized homophobia is like turned on by that because I'm like, fuck, he drinks beer. Like, that's like, I'm like, oh, it's only because like I consider that manly and I couldn't be a part of the guys club. And I'm like,
yeah,
projecting.
I love it.
What's your fucking favorite type of beer drink?
I'm just a cold lager boy. I'm a
lager. Fuck,
I'm a,
yeah.
I'm a fan of a lager, which is basic.
How much foam do you like at the top?
Obviously none. That's again another huge
Dumb
problem.
Question, sorry,
huge
this fantasy. I fucked up the fantasy. how much you like a lot of foam? No, yeah, that's no, bad. Okay. Bad. Sorry.
That's actually a bad job. but I can't deal with the kind of, the drinking culture here is non-existent. There isn't one. I don't feel like anyone's, it's people getting fucked up like one night of the week.
Oh, I see. Versus like just enjoying a pint.
Yeah. Just having a pint with the boys. Pint with the lads.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
The lads.
That's huge for me. I love that.
I love that for you too. Well, honestly, my dream is... one day that I have to travel to London for work and you're going to take me to a place that we can get a pint.
Yeah.
And I'm going to enjoy the beer and then I'll walk outside and smoke a quick blunt and then I'll come back and sip it some more.
Great. That sounds ideal. That sounds like a perfect night out.
Would you be into that sometime?
I would love that. Please God, get on the next flight. It's happening.
Well, you're in New York, so.
I mean, once I'm back.
Okay.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The other question I had that's it's a bit of a topical moment is this quote comes up a lot, which I love, is that you said, "I don't know a fucking thing about politics. I basically never have sex. And half of the anecdotes I'm telling need made-up details to make them funny." Mm-hmm. I like this quote a lot for many reasons. One of the reasons is I think that in this age, there's so much hashtag content. There's so many people putting out stories on the internet, you know, the story time of it all. And I mm-hmm. find that there's an interesting dialogue happening with this Chris Olsen guy. Are you?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so
I had no idea where you're going with that, and it actually everything circles back to Chris Olsen at this moment.
It does. Well, and it also circles back because his ex-boyfriend Ian Paget has been on this very podcast.
Really?
And I had interviewed him right after they had broken up, and now I see this vitriol on the internet, yeah. especially on Twitter, because people on Twitter are so miserable. But basically, like, angry that he gets all of this engagement based on stories that they are not sure if they are true or not. Mm-hmm. Do you care if his stories are true, or do you have an opinion about adding elements to a story to make it come alive more? Because I want to do that as well when I'm talking to add to the drama. Not making up details, but I am adding the drama. Do you have an opinion about that when it comes to the engagement of it all?
Do I have an opinion about that? I think that in general, I think that it's like that it makes me sad. I feel like I think he seems like a nice guy, and I'm mm-hmm. Whenever I see someone doing a TikTok story time, I'm like, absolutely slit my throat. This is a debasement of your humanity that you've chosen to engage with on the most basic level. But also, do I care that they're not true? No, obviously mm-hmm. not. Why would anyone care about that?
I don't care that he is building up his following and his business by doing it, because I'm like, clearly people are watching it because they are entertained by it. And like, if he is, there was a story that after the Grammys, he was talking to person at a party, and then whatever the fuck happened. But basically, people were like, okay, this is how you don't get invited to another party again. And listen, do I get that maybe he's doing that? Sure. Do I care that he's doing that? Not at all, because that's his choice in his life. And like, I've been, you know, it's especially, we are both comedy girls. I feel like a lot of times you might have to change the beat of a story to make it better. And I'm not saying that he is like this, you know, acclaimed comedian, but I think that he has built a huge audience partly because the ways he tells his stories are resonating with someone. And so I get surprised by the people that are so pissed off about it.
I think on some level you do, well, like you said, you do a dance with the devil when you're like a content creator in that way, where if you're that person, what you're putting out there isn't like something you've made. It's not like, you're not making anything. So you have to, you're trading on a kind of like just a basic level of human interest with every new TikTok you put out. And I feel like if that's your job, like all power to you, but oh my God, I'm so scared for you. That's so scary.
Well, and that's a very good point, because people are probably more angry just about like the content creators versus him specifically, because that's what I feel like his gig is that. Do I have an existential crisis about social media every week? Absolutely. Do I want to build my, not only my like voice and how I'm creative and use social media in that way for good and in a productive way? Yes. Do I find it as close to impossible to do it in a way that feels like mentally sound and artistically true to me? Yes. But I think that like it's that's just the nature of the beast in a way.
Truly. I'm just like, I would feel it's such a precarious thing to do. And I feel I have the same thing where I'm like, if I post on Instagram one more time about, like, people please buy tickets to my show, I'm going to block me. Like, I can't...
Of course.
I can't cope with the fact that... also, the weird sort of place you get to where, like, half the people you follow you are just people you know and who are your friends.
Of
and
course.
Half the people are random fans who you do need to post to let them know about stuff, but am I going to alienate the people that I actually know and like? And are they screenshotting all this stuff and sending it to the group chat? Like that kind of thing.
I am
constant paranoia.
I'm sure at one point, take two, at 10 points, something has been screenshotted of mine by a friend or a loose friend and made fun of behind closed doors. But I'm so glad I don't know about it. But it's, I think that's, that's like, again,
you got
to
do it.
The devastation of what it's like to be alive in this.
Truly. If you haven't been screenshotted, are you even a living, breathing human being at this point? No.
Listen.
We all
make
mistakes.
If a screenshot falls in a forest.
Yeah, literally. But to circle back to Chris Olsen, I think that at least when I post stuff, I'm like, well, I'm doing it around a solid thing. Mm-hmm. And this is all kind of like social media stuff that's about that is to do with the thing that I make. Whereas if I was him, I'd be like, fuck, I'm unmoored. I have no anchor. That it's all just videos with Meghan Trainor. And in the same way, you know, in the same way that I'm surprised that like people still have an interest in like the Kardashians or whatever, I'm like that you are that it's hollow. The persona is hollow. You need to make something fixed to tie yourself to at some point. Otherwise, people on Twitter will kill you.
Annihilate you. So when you open your phone, if I were to see like your phone usage, what app do you spend the most time looking at scrolling on?
Twitter.
Ugh, it's bad. I do it a lot too. And it's I have friends I just saw who are like, oh yeah, we deleted ours years ago and life has been better. And I'm like I'm getting close.
I know. I just like to, Instagram's not it for me. And TikTok I don't care about. Twitter is just like, Twitter gets me in a big way.
I do need to ask you the next podcast question, Leo.
Go.
Leo Reich. If the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
This is actually one of the hardest questions I've ever been asked. I can't believe this question. That I screamed when I saw it in my inbox. I couldn't believe it. One character
It's torn families apart, Leo.
It's crazy. There are so many that are up there. I was trying to think of one that maybe isn't, because I feel like there's recently been kind of a resurgence of, because of Mike White, all of the most amazing character actresses in the world are kind of like having that moment. And so it feels like so obvious to say like Jennifer Coolidge or like Molly Shannon or Laura Dern, which it would be such a great choice that I'm sure many people have chosen before.
I'm going to say that Laura Dern has come up less than you would think, primarily because the Jennifer Coolidges have come up more than they have in ever. But this being said, who does your brain go to if you're going past those three?
Well, my instinct is to go more comedy, and my instinct is to say Kate Berlant. Kate Berlant would be my choice.
Leo, can you give snaps with me for your answer? And guess what, Leo?
What?
Clearly we have this universal connection because I was walking my dog with a couple friends and my husband yesterday, and who do I pass?
Kate
Berlant.
Whoa.
Sitting by herself on a bench in Los Angeles on the phone, and my husband was like, was that Kate Berlant? I look back, I see her silhouette, I say, it could be no one else.
It could be no one else with that hair. Are you kidding?
Can you believe that? The character actress that you saved.
Whoa.
I walked past yesterday.
She's on the brain. She's on the cultural brain right now. Thank God.
She is.
Thank God. Also, I would be dead in a ditch without her. Like every other gay comic, she invented being a gay man on stage somehow.
What a great answer, Leo. I'm so thrilled with that because she deserves. And I can't wait for... I know she's becoming the household name that she deserves, but can't you just imagine what's going to happen in the next few years for her? Can't you just imagine?
I know. And on some level, I'm sad about it because obviously the thing that I love as much as her star turns in her like amazing bit parts that she's had and stuff have all been incredible. What I really love to see her do, of course, is stand-up comedy. And she's the best she's ever done it. And I fear when she's leading feature films that she'll leave her incredible stand-up comedy career behind her. But
well, we shall see. We shall see with bated breath what Kate Berlant gives us.
I'm waiting for the
good answer.
I'm waiting for the kind of Independent Spirit Award-winning like feature comedy drama gonna.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, I want a Greta Gerwig directed. Just like very low key, long shots of Kate staring out a window and then saying the funniest thing you ever heard.
Yeah, no shot in that film was less than 15 seconds.
Exactly. Thank God. And thank God.
Oh my God, what a great answer. Well, listen, I do want to ask you a very important question because it's rare that I get a Gen Z icon on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. And I recently looked up an article that listed Gen Z slang.
Yeah.
Leo Reich, I want you to tell me if these are actually words that you or your friends would use.
I'm going to be so bad at this. Okay.
All right. Let's start easy, the ones that I see on TikTok all the time. Do you actually say cap for when something is a lie?
That's super American to me. Heard people say it, but I think that they are like American teens in San Diego. Do you know what I mean? No cap.
Totally.
It's like, no cap. And it's like, okay, well, in my voice, that would sound so weird.
You're like, cap, but also no conversation between you and me. Yeah. Really. Do people actually use this word for money? Guap?
No. What is
that? No. What about this word? Sheesh.
Sheesh. I've had people say that, but they're usually joking.
The definition says it's used to hype someone up if they're looking good or doing something good.
Yeah, I've seen people. Yeah, people maybe say that. A little bit.
See, when I was a kid, said sheesh. Like,
I should say I'm like the oldest Gen Z you can be. So
I'm the oldest Gen Z you can be. That's your next pop single.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
Do you say dank?
I don't. But again, I've heard it said.
Dank means if something is dank, it's excellent or of very high quality. I mean, I knew that. I just wanted to make sure everyone else.
Yeah, there's something Shakespearean about that to me, which I like.
It's quite Shakespearean. Do you talk about people's clothes by calling it drip?
Now this is just like that's just something that rappers do. That's not.
It's on a list. It's parade.com.
That's not Gen Z. Your drip. I mean, I would imagine if I walked up to someone.
A lot of these are like, I don't know if this is Gen Z or if it's just like.
Yeah. If I walked up to someone and been like, nice drip, I would get fully like murdered. And good. It would be justified.
And good for that. Yeah. Do you say bet?
No.
Bet means yes. It can be used to confirm something. It could be compared to the millennial term word. Oh, God.
Yeah. Bet. I mean, again.
I'm now realizing how I sound because if someone were to ask me, so do you say word?
Do you say word? Yeah. Like, no.
Yeah. But... Word, dude. Word.
Period.
Okay, Well, that is on this list. Okay. The final one then. The final one is big yikes.
Big yikes. Ooh. I actually, this is humiliating to admit, I think I probably have said that. It's a big yikes.
I had to have gotten at least one. Okay, yeah, the definition says, it's used when you're so embarrassed that yikes doesn't do it justice.
Ooh, big yikes. Yeah, I probably have said that. I wouldn't say I say it every day, but no. I've been known to maybe dip my toe in saying big yikes occasionally.
Sure.
These are all sort of stuff that's also fine to type, but horrendous to say.
Oh, that's why this has been such a cringy segment. You're right.
Do you know what I mean? It's like you could type cap, I do. But you're not going to say.
Have you typed cap?
I don't think that I would have typed cap, but I wouldn't rule it out in future. It could be in my future for me. You know, that could be a huge part of my future. It could be a cornerstone.
This all feels like a big cap to me.
I forget it so wrong. When it's so simple to get it so wrong, wow.
Listen, I aim to please. Leo Reich, I'm so thrilled that you came on That's a Gay Ass podcast. I jump at the chance to talk to a hilarious, exciting, gay Jew voice in this world. And you have exceeded my expectations. Before we say goodbye, I want to ask you a question that, I don't know, you might be able to answer, might not. I did not prep you on this. It's the final question of the podcast. Leo Reich, what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Oh my God.
He asked the 24-year-old
Oh
British.
My God. Yeah, that's actually, again, not a huge part of our culture, but I want to say Rat Race.
Wow. You surprise us with every twist and turn. What a great answer.
I was really itching for a rewatch of Rat Race recently, and I still haven't done it, and I need to do it, and it's a great film.
Okay, you know what's going to happen is when you're in London, I'll take my plane ticket, we'll have our beer at the pub, and then we will watch Rat Race.
Do you know what I mean? That's a great movie. And it's also the kind of film, they didn't make him like that. They don't make him like that anymore.
They don't love you like I love you.
A star-studded?
They make him like they make him.
A star-studded mid-budget comedy. Come on.
Let's cheers to that.
Cheers to that. My iced coffee. I knew it was a gay podcast, so I had to.
You had to, and you did, and I'm thrilled for that. Your show, Literally Who Cast, goes through March 11th at the Greenwich House Theater. Leo, what else do you want to plug, or where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram, Leo_Reich. You can follow me on Twitter, @LeoIsTired. You can follow me on TikTok, @Leo_Reich as well. What else do I need to plug? Nothing really. Come to my show, stay in touch, DM me about my legs, whatever you want to do. Or don't. Do you know what I mean? I'm sure you follow enough people.
No, I'll DM about your legs.
Thank God.
You asked us to, and so you're about to get a lot of leggy messages.
Yeah, I better get a big influx. Otherwise, I'll know that people didn't listen to the end.
And that is how we get them. Congratulations, you have won the Gay Ass Podcast. Thank you for coming on.
I will see you over our beer
and break a leg in Australia and beyond.
Thank you so much. See you in London, baby.
Have you ever heard anyone funnier? God, it's annoying how young he is. If you enjoyed this episode, I don't know, message me, message him, tell the world, and tell a friend. We'll see you next week for one of my favorite people that I've met in the last year, and leave that review if you care. I love you.
we are part of that collection of two white men doing podcasts. We're two queer white men. Does that differentiate us at all?
Does it?
It totally helps with the topic.
We're talking
about musicals.
And we're talking about musical theater.
I'm Peter.
And I'm Nathan.
And yes, musical theater has gospel.
And dancing boys.
And fancy hats.
So join us for the Gospel of Musical Theater, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.